Hello, I'm the bit before the theme music, and I have a question for you.
What's this? What's this?
It's the most wonderful time of the year.
What's this? What's this?
It's Christmas time.
What's this? What's this?
It's all humbug, I tell you!
What's this? What's this?
Well, says team, a trusty old Red Ryder carbine action 200 shot range model air rifle.
What is this?
It's the Total Christmas Podcast with your host, Jack.
He's got the IQ of a rabbit.
Yes, but he's got the faith of a child. Simple.
What was that? What was that? Who's been messing around with my theme music? I resent those comments. I do not have the IQ of a rabbit. Well, maybe an intelligent rabbit. Like one who's really clever. I can't believe that. If I find out who did that, I'm going to be coming around your house. There's going to be all sorts of trouble. Goodness. Right. Hello, you beautiful people. I'm still angry about that. Hello, you beautiful people. And welcome to the Total Christmas Podcast. Do you want to do the interactive bit? Let's go. How are you? No, that was not an improvement on the normal theme music. Forget it. No interactive bit. You blew it. Right. I've had a couple of emails, actually. First up, I had one from Natalie Bickle. Now, I don't know if you remember Natalie Bickle. A year or so ago, she came on the show. She's written a lovely Christmas book called The Christmas Clue, a children's book, ideal for anyone who's got young kids. But she sent me an email, and it says, if you're interested, Touchpoint Press is accepting fictional Christmas stories for their annual anthology. They've extended the deadline, I believe, to the end of August. Let me know if you've been sitting on a story and I can put you in touch with the publisher. Now, here's the deal. You are probably aware that I have written a couple of novels. They're out there. They're on Amazon. If you like swearing or reading swear words, then they're ideal for you. But I've never written anything Christmassy, and I don't think anything suitable for this anthology. If you're out there and you have written a Christmas story, then this could be ideal for you. So I'm going to read out the blurb. It says, Christmas Anthology. We're looking for wholesome stories that inspire, instill kindness and hope, and contain a sense of togetherness and community. It must be 3,000 to 700 words, and the deadline has been extended to August the 31st. Contributors receive their choice of a $50 Amazon gift card or $50 cash via PayPal and $25 for every reprint. And contributors will have a short bio included and will receive a complimentary digital and paperback copy of the book. Submit a short pitch, 50 to 100 words, and full manuscript to submissions@touchpointpress.com with Christmas Anthology and then 2024 submission in the subject line. Now, I will put a link in the show notes and I'll probably put something up on Facebook. So if you've written a short story and you think it would be ideal for this anthology, then check it out and maybe you'll get yours printed in the anthology. And I want to say a big thank you to Natalie for sending that through. So you've got about a month. Why not write yourself a lovely Christmas short story? So I've also received an email from Kevin Church and he's put, perhaps the podcast needs a Canadian Christmas correspondent. Well, that's it. He's self-appointed. And he's put, Kevin, the Canadian, the Total Christmas Podcast correspondent, is how you and your three listeners will address me henceforth. So you hear that, kids? Whenever we're talking about Kevin Church, we don't call him that anymore. We call him Kevin, the Canadian Christmas Podcast correspondent. Good to have you on board, Kevin. If you work as hard as all my other correspondents, then you probably won't do much work. He also sent me a trailer to the new Santa Claus movie, Red One. This is the one that stars The Rock, and it's also got J.K. Simmons as Santa Claus. I was really looking forward to it until I saw the trailer. And I can't lie to you, I don't really like these sort of modern or futuristic takes on Santa Claus. I like the old style one, you know, Santa Claus the movie, that sort of thing. But, you know, it's got The Rock in it, and it's got J.K. Simmons, so it can't be all bad, so I probably will check it out. And also, Kevin has put, Jack, I bought a boat. I'm the property director for a sailing club on the Toronto Island. I've strung up Christmas lights in the clubhouse and someone keeps unplugging them. When I catch that sneaky wind junkie, that's what in the UK we'd call yachties. When I catch that sneaky wind junkie, there will be words. I promise you that, Jack. Words. I hope you do find them. You find that culprit, you make them turn the lights back on and then sing a wonderful Christmas song. So thanks for that, Kevin. And again, great to have you on board. I think that's all my housekeeping. So now let's get started with this.
I'm singing. I'm in a store and I'm singing. I'm in a store and I'm singing.
Hey! There's no singing in the North Pole.
Boys and girls, this episode's Christmas Not So Classic is a song that I only found out about, like, in this last week. And it's not an old song. In fact, it only came out this Christmas just gone. But I don't remember hearing a thing about it when it came out. And I will say this. You know, Cher, she brought out that Christmas album and everyone was talking about... there was two of her songs that people were talking about and I had a bit of airplay for those and stuff like that. There was a lot of fuss about her, but there was no fuss about this one. And this one is by Bon Jovi. Yeah. Now, I'm sure you've heard of Bon Jovi. They're one of the biggest rock bands of all time. They've sold over 130 million records worldwide, which is quite a lot, I should say, bearing in mind I haven't sold a single one. Actually, that's not true. I did sell one. What did I have? Yeah, it was an old Bee Gees record that I nicked off my mum from her collection. Sold it to one of my mates. Yeah, I think he gave me £3 for it. That was a long time ago, though. So I've sold one compared to their 130 million. Anyway, they already had a Christmas hit in the UK with this one. Please, come home for Christmas. Please, come for Christmas. If not for Christmas, by New Year's night. Yeah, they got to number 7 in the UK. I think that was in 1994. I'm guessing, roundabout then anyway. I love that song. It's funny because when that song came out, I thought that was the original. And then it wasn't until like a few years later I found out that the Eagles had done it. And then I found out many, many years after that, it wasn't even the Eagles were the first ones. Yeah, it was a guy called Charles Brown. Yeah, like a blues singer. Charles Brown. Charlie Brown. Only it's not Charlie Brown. It's a completely different bloke. Anyway, I'm not here to talk about that one. I'm here to talk about the song that Bon Jovi released last Christmas. You remember last Christmas when I gave you my heart? Yeah, well, the very next day, I think we all remember what you did. Can I just move on? Yeah, they released it last Christmas, and I wanted to cover this one because it came to my attention. I was reading a bit about Bon Jovi, and I found out that his mum had passed away just last week, and it was only 3 days before her 84th birthday. And it's apt, actually, because this song was written by Bon Jovi, dedicated to his parents. And they were ill at Christmas, and they couldn't make it for the family Christmas thing, so he wrote them a song instead. And the song is called Christmas Isn't Christmas, and it was released last year on the 17th of November. And this is what it sounds like. Fancy paper, pretty ribbons, wrap each present that is new. In the sound of this good season, feels the night. We light a fire, send season's greetings. We'll sing a song of you. There's nothing wrong, but this year Christmas isn't right. So this song was a non-album single, and it didn't do particularly massive, didn't do a lot of business. Now, it says it reached number 24 on the UK single sales chart, but I've just looked on the UK charts website and it's not on there, so I'm wondering if the singles sales is different to just the standard UK chart. I don't know. In the US, apparently it got to number 15 on the US rock digital sales. There you go. Yeah, so it didn't do massive. I don't know how well it got airplay wise. I don't really listen to the radio much these days. I tend to listen to podcasts a lot more or listen to my own playlists. So yeah, I kind of missed that one. But it's a shame because it's actually a pretty decent song and I like it. And I think this could have been a classic. I bet if they'd released it at like the peak of their success, it would have become a Christmas classic. But I guess these days they're not quite as popular as they were, at least sales wise. Yeah, so I don't know if we will hear it again much in coming years. Anyway, I'll tell you a bit about the video. It's not great, actually. It's not great, but it is interesting because it was filmed in a bar called Santa's Pub in Nashville, Tennessee. Yeah. And the guy that owns the bar is called Denzel Santa Irwin, and he's serving behind the bar in the video. Yeah, he's this guy with like a long white beard, as you'd hope with a guy whose nickname is Santa. And you've got John sitting there on a bar stool in like the middle of the bar singing the song, and it's like he's singing it karaoke style, and then it cuts to other people singing the same song, karaoke, and his mates at the bar are leaning against the bar just watching him sing. And that's it, really. It just sort of keeps cutting between his mates, other people singing, John Bon Jovi singing, a couple of people leaning against the bar looking sad at Christmas. And that's it. Yeah, it's not a great video, but I think it is a good song. So if you haven't heard it, well, I'll play a bit more for you. Maybe you should add that one to your playlist. Christmas Isn't Christmas by Bon Jovi. Now it's time for this.
Do you hear what I hear?
Do you hear what I hear?
Boys and girls, it is Bob Baker, our podcast self-appointed barman, and this is his first segment. I've got to let you know, I'm not sure if he was standing next to a washing machine on spin cycle when he recorded this, but there was a bit of background noise that I've had to try and edit it out. It's still in there a little bit, but I tell you what, this segment, you've got to listen to it. It's so interesting. Take it away, Bob.
We have a saying at the Tiki Bar, whenever our problems get complicated and life becomes a bit demanding, just hold on and let me drink about it. Now, I know I've spoken before about my son's friend from Sheffield. I talked about him when we discussed the use of Muppet in episode 77. He's getting married and next weekend is his stag do in England. When I heard this, my Do You Hear What I Hear spidey sense started tingling. I recalled the scene from Love Actually when Peter is getting married while his best friend Mark is in love with his bride, Keira Knightley. On the altar, they begin talking about his stag night with Brazilian prostitutes that turned out to be men. I had two competing thoughts. What's a stag do? And they sound like a crazy good time. The same also holds true for the female hen do, which UK women will enjoy before a wedding. You will not hear these descriptions in the US. We just have bachelor and bachelorette parties. The transition from unmarried to married is one of life's biggest events, and people have always marked the occasion with a variety of celebrations. What is interesting is the historic basis for this rite of passage. Our modern-day events have their roots in ancient Greece. Pre-wedding rituals are dictated by gender. Before a woman could be married, there was a ritual called proalia, where the bride would spend time with her mother and female relatives, friends, and slaves. The bride would offer gifts to Artemis, the virgin goddess of childbirth, to ask for support in leaving the sphere of virginity. Women were considered valuable assets at the time, and so a wedding transaction was worthy of a huge family celebration. As for the male party, it is also traced back to the 5th century and ancient Greece. The Spartans would celebrate the night before a man came of age and was to be paired with a woman. A pre-marriage raucous feast would be held with his military comrades to toast the groom. While the bride traditionally anticipated the loss of her virginity, the groom was more focused on the loss of his bachelorhood. This celebration was about revelry and feasting and male freedoms of sexual experience, drinking and leaving the home unchaperoned. So then why the British terms stag and hen? Again, this is reflected in gender roles. They originated in medieval England to refer to a male animal or a female bird. The term stag has a strong male connotation. It's a male deer and the leader of the pack. Stags are a symbol of manhood, a virile and strong animal in the prime of its life, which is supposed to represent the groom. A second reason may be linked to the Celtic and pagan god Cernunnos, the horned god. He takes the form of a wild stag for hunts and is the god of fertility, life, and wealth. He was very popular with ancient Brits, so it's not surprising that he is part of the marriage ritual. Now, the word hen has been used as slang for a woman since the 1620s. Hens are associated with flocks, which contribute to the word's association with a group. It is horribly patronizing, as the image of busy hens, feather fluffing, clucking, and preening is also applied to groups of women. Thus, the term hen-do was also used to describe a gathering of tea, chit-chats, gossip, and smart hats. The origin of the stag and hen references were first used for gatherings attended to by either just men or just women, and not necessarily tied to marriage. Victorian-era stag outings often involved activities like fishing, oyster suppers, magic shows, and dressing up in costume. By the 1870s, the equivalent hen events had also become popular, featuring singing, dancing, tea, and other dainty amusements. Although in 1907, one newspaper complained that in what is vulgarly called a hen party, cigarettes and liquors are handed out and partaken of just as though men were of the company. The current hen and stag do evolved by the mid-19th century, when the terms became associated with pre-wedding celebrations. The modern hen do was a result of Britain's industrial culture, when a working-class bride-to-be would celebrate with her co-workers because she was leaving her job to become a housewife and mother. This provided an excuse for the women not to behave respectably in the repressed English culture. Thus, we arrive at today's existential problem. Our lives are no longer segregated by gender. Marriage doesn't always involve opposite sexes. We most often have experienced premarital sex, and couples don't expect to lose their friendships after the wedding. The rationale for these stag and hen do's has faded away, but instead, the celebrations themselves have grown more elaborate and more expensive. Which I guess just means we all want an excuse for a party. Cheers and happy Christmas.
What research? What research? Fantastic work. I didn't know half of that. And it's very interesting. One thing I do know is that in Australia, they call it a Bucks party. Or Bucks night. Bucks do. Yeah, there you go. That's my little bit of input. Thanks for that, Bob. It'll be back again later on. Now it's time for this. This is the quiz, this is the quiz, this is the quiz, this is the quiz. Okay, boys and girls, it's the quiz, you know the score. I ask you questions, you give me answers. Or I ask you questions and you fast forward till the end of this segment and then carry on listening. I don't know what you're up to. Question number one. Who sent me an email about the crappy version of the quiz I did last week? You know, the Santa Banta thing I bought at a car boot sale. Well, I'll give you the answer. You don't have to wait till the end. The answer was Pamela Wootton. Okay, Pamela Wootton. This is what she put. I absolutely prefer the original quiz as opposed to whatever this week's was. Yeah, that's what she put. And I'll tell you what, kids, I know it was a shambles. I realised that halfway through recording it. But I don't need the beautiful Pamela Wootton to tell me that, do I now? No, I don't, Pamela Wootton. I've said her name a number of times because she also said, I don't really have a question, but I love the way you say my name, so I'm hoping you will mention this email. So there you go, Pamela Wootton. I said your name four times now. Want a fifth time? Here it comes. Pamela Wootton. I hope I'm saying it right, Pamela Wootton. Yeah, and then she put, Merry Christmas, you beautiful person, at the end, which I thought was a delightful way to sign off. Anyway, I tell you what, Pamela, you might say you preferred the original quiz. Well, wait till you hear the questions this time, because you ain't going to prefer them. I'll tell you that for nothing. Just so you know, we are back to the original quiz. It was just a one-off last week. I realised my mistake halfway through. We've already discussed that. Now we're doing the proper quiz. Question number one. It is recorded in an accounts book for 1377, that's the year, 1377, that 28 oxen and 300 sheep were eaten at the Christmas feast of which King of England? I don't think he ate them all himself. It's possible, but actually it's not possible, is it? 300 sheep? Nah. He'd need at least two or three days to get through them, wouldn't he? That's a difficult one, but don't forget, there's a year there. That might help you. If you know your Kings of England, 1377, all you got to do is remember who was King of England in 1377, and you're sorted, aren't you? Yeah. Question number two. Who wrote the crime short stories The Adventure of the Christmas Pudding and A Christmas Tragedy? Who wrote them books? Okay, question number 3. How many Christmas trees does the Great Hall at Hogwarts School of Witchcraft and Wizardry have in the Harry Potter novels? How many Christmas trees in the Great Hall? You must know that, mustn't you? Goodness. Question number 4. Which of the Jaws films sees the son of late police chief Brody attacked and killed by a great white shark just before Christmas? There's the Christmas element. There you go. Question number something. In the song The 12 Days of Christmas, what were given on the 8th day? To your true love. Yeah. Well, true love gave to me. Actually, I should remember because they were given to me. What did my true love give to me on the 8th day of Christmas? Not your true love, my true love. Gave to me. Next one. In 2011, Michael Bublé reached number 7 with which song? I'm guessing that's in the UK charts. I could be wrong. With which song that had originally been a 1951 hit in America for Perry Como? Pretty easy that, isn't it? Name a Perry Como Christmas song and bang, you're there. Next one. But you're not going to get this if you're not in the UK and also if you're probably under the age of 40. It's a slim category of my listeners that will fall into this segment who do know the answer, but I thought I'd ask this one anyway because it's quite iconic, actually. In the 1976 Morecambe and Wise Christmas special, which newsreader famously showed off her legs in dance routines? Okay, this is another one that's a bit UK-centric. And when I say a bit UK-centric, it's very UK-centric. But again, this is one I want to talk about. So, in the 1974 Christmas episode of which classic TV sitcom does Harold want to go to Switzerland for Christmas, but his dad Albert prefers Bognor Regis? And I'll tell you something, boys and girls. I took my girls and wife to Bognor Regis earlier this year. Yeah, we were staying at a campsite further down the road in one of those static caravan things, and we went to Bognor Regis for the day, and let me tell you, boys and girls, it's a shithole. And sorry, I apologise for the language, but that is how bad it is. And yeah, I don't know why Albert wants to go there, but there you go. Next, oh, up to number 9 already. Right, how many Christmas-themed novels and novellas did Charles Dickens write? How many? Tell me. And the last question, Finnish company Pokka, that means they come from Finland. I'm not saying, oi, company, Finnish. Finnish company, Finnish. Stop that right now. Stop that right now, company Pokka is a lead. Sorry, Finnish company Pokka, or Pokka of Finland, is a leading producer of what type of meat products? Okay, now I can tell you, I didn't get that one, and I was racking my tiny little pea brain, but I didn't get it. Right, that was your 10 questions. How'd you get on? Well, you don't know, do you? I haven't given you the answers yet. Wait till I give you the answers and then tell me how you got on. First question. It is recorded in an accounts book for 13... Question number 1. Who was king in 1377 in the UK? He ate a lot of sheep. Ready? It's Richard II. I didn't get it. I guessed Henry VIII. I don't know. Henry VIII was probably hundreds of years later or possibly hundreds of years before. I didn't know. Question number 2. Who wrote the crime short stories The Adventures of the Christmas Pudding and A Christmas Tragedy? Well, my first thoughts were Arthur Conan Doyle. I thought they might have been Sherlock Holmes mysteries. But recently, I listened to one of the Christmas Sherlock Holmes ones, and I believe it was the only Christmas one. So then I thought, well, who else writes crime stuff? Agatha Christie. The answer is Agatha Christie. Yeah, I got that one right. Question number 3. How many Christmas trees does the Great Hall at Hogwarts School of Witchcraft and Wizardry have in the Harry Potter novels? Well, I thought they had like one tree per house. You know, you got your Slytherin and your Gryffindor and your Hufflepuff and your Ravenclaw. Yeah, I thought they had one each. I was wrong. They had three each. Or at least there are 12 trees. So I got that one wrong, didn't I? Okay, which of the Jaws films sees the son of late police chief Brody attacked and killed by a great white shark just before Christmas? Well, the clue there is the late police chief Brody. Means it's definitely not one of the ones that Roy Scheider was in. So yeah, I knew that one, and it was Jaws 4 The Revenge. Yeah, with Michael Caine. And you know, there was this famous quote from an interview he did, and someone sort of made a comment about the film, and he said, "I've never seen it, but I've seen the house that I bought with the money I earned on it." Okay, so that was, yeah, probably the best of the Jaws films, if you're going in reverse order. Right, here's a question for you, right? Do you remember my true love? What did they buy me on the eighth day? Shall I tell you? 8 maids of milking. 8 of them. Yeah, I had nowhere to put them. Big mistake. Next one. What is that song that Michael Bublé sang that Perry Como had also sung? It was, of course, "It's beginning to look a lot like Christmas." Ba-be-doo-ba-doo. Next one. In the 1976 Morecambe and Wise Christmas special, which newsreader famously showed off her legs in dance routines? Now, here's the deal. The answer is Angela Rippon. And you're there going, "I've never heard of her." And I don't expect you to have. But this is one of those things that is really Christmassy in the UK. Now, the Morecambe and Wise Christmas specials in the 70s and early 80s were like the biggest rating grabbers of the Christmas season. And it was a real tradition. And Morecambe and Wise were this famous double act, Eric Morecambe and Ernie Wise. Interesting fact, my grandmother-in-law, my wife's nan, she met both of them. She was a massive fan of Eric Morecambe. Anyway, in one of the episodes, obviously the 1976 one, because that was in the question, they had this newsreader on there, and she starts off, sat at her news desk, and they're sort of making a comment, you never get to see her legs. So she gets out from behind the desk, and she's doing all these high kicks, and she's wearing a skirt that's like slit all the way up, so you can see her beautiful long legs. Yeah, and like I said, it's really iconic. Now, Angela Rippon was also the presenter of Come Dancing, which was like the precursor to Strictly Come Dancing, which in the UK is the version of the show Dancing with the Stars. Yeah. So there you go. That's Angela Rippon. And that's Morecambe and Wise. Okay, next one. Another tricky one if you're not my age or older and from the UK. In the 1974 Christmas episode of which classic TV sitcom does Harold want to go to Switzerland for Christmas, but his dad Albert prefers Bognor? Well, the answer to that is Steptoe and Son. And if you're thinking, "I've never heard of Steptoe and Son. What's Steptoe and Son?" Well, I'll tell you what it is. It's Sanford and Son. Yeah, we did it originally in the UK, and then it was remade in the States called Sanford and Son. And if you're there saying, "What's Sanford and Son?" Let me tell you, Sanford and Son was like this American version of a really popular sitcom in the UK called Steptoe and Son. And you're there going, "What's Steptoe and Son?" Well, let me tell you. No, that's, we're done. We're done with that bit. Yeah, sorry if you didn't like that question, but I thought you might find it interesting that Sanford and Son, if you're from the US, you've definitely heard of it. And I did actually cover a Christmas episode of Sanford and Son because they did like a version of A Christmas Carol. Yeah, and I mentioned Steptoe and Son then. So if you're an avid listener to this show and you're taking notes while you listen, well, a couple of years ago, I talked about it. So you should be able to remember that one, shouldn't you? Yes, but you probably don't. Okay, where are we now? Okay, how many Christmas-themed novels and novellas did Charles Dickens write? I guess 6. It was 5. Bit upset about that. And the final one, Finnish company Pokka, company called Pokka from Finland, is a leading producer of what type of meat products? I'm racking my brains, and I'm thinking, well, it's not turkeys, it can't be turkeys, can it? What else is there that's Christmassy? And then I thought, well, don't they eat a lot of fish in Finland at Christmas? Maybe it's some sort of fish. So Matt, that was my answer, fish. Well, do you want to know what it was? Think of another Christmas meat. You ready? Reindeer. There you go, boys and girls. I'm not proud of it. That was the answer. Yeah. So, do you want to know what I scored? 6. Yeah, disappointed with that. 6. Still, I'm sure a lot of you did a lot worse because some of those questions were pretty tricky. And I bet Pamela Wootton's there thinking, goodness me, do you know what, I almost prefer that Santa Banta crap he did last time. I'm not doing Santa Banta again, not unless someone begs and pleads with me. Or maybe if I've got a guest on, I could do it with them, just for a change. But it's unlikely. We'll see what happens. I can't see into the future, can I? Actually, I can, because I know what's coming up next. It's this. Do you know what, I quite like this joke, kids. I quite like it. Hopefully you'll like it too. Here we go. A man walks up to the perfume counter of a large department store and said he would like a bottle of Chanel No. 5 gift wrapped for his wife's Christmas present. "A little surprise, is it, sir?" asked the sales assistant. "I'll say," said the man. "She's expecting a Caribbean cruise." Hey! Boom! Merry Christmas! Bob is back, boys and girls. Again, the recording quality isn't the best it's ever been on this segment, but Bob, you yourself look fantastic.
Thanks, Jack. You know, I understand the reason why I first started to listen to Total Christmas. There are so many other Christmas podcasts. I can say this because, as a Christmas podcaster, I am a known contributor to the problem. I listen to a lot of them. I enjoy them all, but this is the only one that I wanted to be a part of and to contribute to. And the reason is the humor. A good sense of humor is about connecting with others and fostering positivity. It helps you to cope with life's challenges and to navigate through difficult times with a smile on your face. It truly spreads a real smile of joy. What you should try to do between now and the next show is to smile and joke in your next personal encounters. Cultivate a giving spirit through your laughter and kindness. Share jokes, spread smiles, and brighten someone's day with your laughter. During these days in retail, even the simplest of smiles from a customer is rare and fleeting. Next time you reach the front of the line, make the most of your interaction by smiling, engaging, and flashing a little humor. A healthy sense of humor is like a soothing balm or a light diversion during stressful times. It helps you to navigate life's challenges with a smile on your face. Let the laughter flow and watch as it transforms you and the others around you for the better. If you have another way to hand out smiles or to spread the joy, you set it up with Jack. He'll deliver to me, and we'll all find a way to spread our arms and laughs around the world.
I like that one. I like that a lot. You know, quite often I'll try and add a bit of humour into interactions, and sometimes it works and sometimes it doesn't. I think that's a lot of my humour is like that. But you know, when you meet people, it's nice to have a joke, isn't it? And a laugh and brighten someone's day. And if you've got something funny to say, then say it and spread the love. Yeah, good one, Bob. Now, I've got to plug Bob's podcast. It's Festive Foreign Film Fans, and it's a podcast that talks about festive foreign films. Now, I plug it every episode, so you know the details, but go and check it out, because it's blinding. Thanks again, Bob. Now, let's do this.
Humbug.
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 Humbug. Bah humbug.
It's all humbug, I tell you.
Christmas a humbug, Uncle. Oh, you don't mean that, surely.
Boys and girls, this episode's version of A Christmas Carol is The Stingiest Man in Town. Now, there's two versions of this. There's this one, which was produced in 1956, and then there's the Rankin Bass animated version, which was kind of like a remake of this, and that one was, I believe, 1978. Now, I've wanted to do this one for a while, but the only versions of it I could see were on DVD for like 20 odd quid, and I thought, I'm not shelling out 20 odd quid, but I checked the other day and it's turned up on YouTube, which is fantastic, and I sat and watched it, and to be honest, wasn't as good as I was expecting. Nah, it was alright, it was something. So this version was part of the Alcoa Hour, and that was a TV slot where they do like a different play or a different show each week, and I guess this was a Christmas one where they were doing A Christmas Carol, although like I say, they called it The Stingiest Man in Town. Now, Alcoa stands for the Aluminium Company of America, and at the end there's actually quite a nice advert for aluminium foil, so stay tuned for that after you finish watching it. Now, this was originally shown as a live performance. Yeah, they televised it live, and the programme was originally broadcast in colour, but this was before videotape existed, right? So it was only preserved in black and white. So what they did was they set up a film camera in front of a TV screen and they film it in black and white. That's what they had to do, yeah. For a long time, it was actually thought to be a completely lost film because back then they didn't preserve everything that was screened. But by chance, a copy of the master reel was found in the home of a retired executive from Alcoa, and it was restored for a DVD release. So it was originally released on DVD in 2011. So I guess it had been like around 55 years after it was originally broadcast. Yeah. And now I'm going to lead you through how it goes. It is a musical. It's only the second ever musical version they did. And a while ago, I did cover the first ever musical version. That starred Frederick March as Scrooge, but the chap that played Jacob Marley in that version played Scrooge in this version, and it's Basil Rathbone. We'll get to that in a second. Now, it starts off in the street, and you've got the intro, like the four lads singing. I don't know much about the four lads. I'm guessing they were four lads. Yeah, so they're there singing in the street, and then Fred comes along and they all start singing an old-fashioned Christmas. And there's an interesting bit where some bloke is trying to kiss a woman under the mistletoe. He's got his mistletoe there and he said, come on, love, kiss, 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 kiss. She's having none of it. That doesn't stop him. Don't know if that'd fly these days. But Fred comes in and he gets a kiss off her, cheeky sausage. Anyway, so he goes in to see Scrooge. And the dialogue in this one is very loose compared to the dialogue in the books. They've changed a lot. It's not, you know, sometimes they tweak a little bit. In this one, they change the dialogue pretty much. So the scenes are there, the dialogue isn't. He comes in, talks to Scrooge. Scrooge gives it the old, I'm not interested. I don't want your crappy old Christmas. And so he leaves. They sing a song, actually. And I'd counted the number of times that Scrooge says humbug. And he says it about 15 times. Yeah, but there is a song where he's saying humbug in it. I'm not going to bother playing any of that song. I didn't care for it. So Fred leaves, and in come the portly gentlemen. And what I found interesting about this is one of them sounds like he's been on the sauce.
I have no doubt his generosity is well represented by his surviving partner.
Yeah, but I mean, it is Christmas Eve, so you can understand a man having a couple of drinks early on in the day. That's fine, we'll let it pass. Obviously, you don't want to give him any money. Then is the bit when Cratchit wants to leave, and this was interesting, not massively interesting, but I'm going to say it. Scrooge doesn't just say come in all the earlier on Boxing Day, he actually says come in 2 hours earlier. Now, I don't know what time he's starting, but goodness me, that's ridiculous. Anyway, Cratchit leaves, and then the cleaner comes in the background. She doesn't actually do anything. This little boy comes in, little carol singer. He actually bursts in. He walks in. It's not like he's singing outside, like in the book or all the versions you see. He actually comes into Scrooge's office, and he's singing God Rest Ye Merry Gentlemen, which I liked, because quite often the carol singer at Scrooge's door sings a different tune. Bean Bunny, for example, sings Good King Wenceslas. But in this one, the boy sings God Rest Ye Merry Gentlemen, and Scrooge tells him to naff off. Then the cleaner comes over and she starts asking Scrooge for an advance. And he's like, no, I ain't giving you an advance. You can't have an advance on your wages. What do you think this is? And then there's a chap outside called Harry Hawkins, and he's looking for old bottles and rags, etc. And Scrooge is like, yeah, good for you, but I ain't giving you anything. But, you know, good for you for having a job. So then the four lads start singing The Stingiest Man in Town, which is the theme song, boys and girls. Look at that. There it is. While they're singing that, Scrooge goes off. Now, obviously, they've got to do some scene changes, haven't they? So Scrooge can't be there in this, because the next scene, he's laying in bed. There's no door knocker, none of that stuff. It's just Scrooge already in bed. Of course, Jacob Marley comes in. Interestingly, for some reason, he's wearing a veil. And he's like, oh, I'm Jacob Marley. Then he lifts the veil. Scrooge's like, oh, my goodness, you are Jacob Marley. And this very much reminded me of A Christmas Carol the musical, the Kelsey Grammer one, where Jason Alexander plays Jacob Marley. And he's singing, and there's like all the ghosts of the other bad people turn up in the room as he's singing his number. Well, in this version, you've got Jacob Marley singing, and spirits start turning up in the room, yeah, and then a lot of them start all dancing around. And originally they're saying, like, you know, oh, he was a bad boy, but then it's just weird looking spirits all dancing around. Then we see the ghost of Christmas past, and to be honest, the way they've done it, he could be the ghost of Christmas present. He's got like the beard, he's got the robe. The only thing is, he's got his hood up, but not all the way up. You can still see his face. So really, yeah, he could have got away with being the ghost of Christmas present. They walk down the street. They walk through Scrooge's bedroom, because Scrooge actually lives above his counting house, or in the room next to his counting house. They walk through the counting house out into the street, and he says, walk with me through country lanes. Well, they're not walking through country lanes, they're walking through this street in London. And then they sort of get to the edge of the set, and the ghost of Christmas past starts talking about a boy. He goes, imagine a boy that's left all on his own at school.
Do you recall a little boy who used to spend his Christmas holidays alone?
Yes, yes, I was that little boy.
He didn't even have to leave his bed for this bit. If you're not going to show him anything, which he didn't show him. And Scrooge starts going, oh yeah, I remember that boy. That boy was me. Which we didn't even see. But then the ghost of Christmas present does take him to Fezziwig's party. And there's a bit of the start. And this, they did seem to stay fairly true to the book. Where he's going, Cheer up, Ebenezer. Let's get those shutters up, whatever. And he's going, Ebenezer, where are you? Oh, there you are. He's 2 foot away. It's like there's no one in between him. It's not just a bunch of people and he's amongst the crowd. It's literally, Ebenezer is about 2 foot from him. He's like, Ebenezer, where are you? And then the camera moves very slightly. Oh, there you are. All the girls turn up and they have a lovely dance. That's nice. Everyone's dancing. Belle turns up, of course. Yeah, not like in the book, but we'll ignore that. Then you have Belle and Scrooge talking, and Scrooge is saying about, you can't be poor. It's no good being poor, you know. I'm not standing for it. Poor's bad. And then they start singing this song. They're not actually in the party anymore. They're like out, I don't know, like sort of in the country somewhere. But don't forget, this is all filmed on the same soundstage. So they're there singing this song. And as they're singing, other people are coming in, bringing in these gold blocks. And it starts off that it's a good thing that he's earning money. And there's sort of these huge gold bricks that they're placing between Scrooge and Belle as they're singing. And then they build a wall. Do you see? Yeah, it's a metaphor for Scrooge and Belle's relationship. The gold has come between them. Clever. So they're singing their song and sadly their love is over. And you can tell it's over because we cut to an ad break. And now it's the turn of the Ghost of Christmas Present. And he looks like a Roman emperor a bit, the way he's dressed. That's what I thought. And they sing a big song about the Christmas spirit. This is all going on in Scrooge's bedroom. And a load of dancers come in. And I think the dancers are sort of meant to be toys because you've got like a clown and a nutcracker or soldier type thing. And a ballerina. And they're all dancing around and they're singing and stuff. And then we go to visit the Cratchits. Well, Mrs. Cratchit's there doing the cooking on her own. And for some reason, Scrooge and the Ghost of Christmas Present are stood on this table. And he's like, oh, she's going to see us. It's like, well, she can't see us. Don't panic. So then Scrooge gets down off the table and he goes over and lifts the lid on the potatoes. Now, I like this because the potatoes and applesauce are both mentioned in the book. And he lifts the lid on the potatoes and he's looking at them, saying, oh, decent cooking she's doing there. And then Mrs. Cratchit is like, oh, I thought I put the lid on that and puts it back on. Which is interesting because it suggests they can affect what's going on, even if they can't be seen. And then he lifts the lid on the applesauce and tries some, the dirty bugger. Bit cheeky, I thought. Then Peter comes in and Peter's whinging because his shirt's too tight, which was, again, a little bit of an Easter egg from what it says in the book. And then Martha comes in. She works at a milliner's, which is a hat maker's, and she's saying, oh, I'd love to own one of the hats that I make. And we find out that Tiny Tim, because he turns up with his dad, and we find out that Santa has brought Tiny Tim a music box, and he's playing it. He's got his lovely little music box. And then Martha sings a song about Santa. And this, I think, may be one of the first, if not the first version of A Christmas Carol, where they talk about Santa in it. Yeah, they talk about it quite a bit, or sing about it at least. And Scrooge is there going, will Tim die, right? Well, looking at him, you wouldn't think so. He looks the prime of health. Apart from his limp, you'd think he's fine and dandy. There's no coffin. He doesn't look drawn or anything like that. He just looks like a healthy young lad. Big smile on his face, rosy cheeks. I say rosy, it's black and white. I'm guessing they were rosy. And then, after Scrooge asks this, the Ghost of Christmas Present starts singing a song about Tiny Tim dying. Yeah. I'll even play a bit for you. Have a listen to this.
If he passes on after he is gone, there's one less in the nation. Let him rest in peace and he will decrease the surplus population.
While he's singing this song, it sort of zooms in on Tim eating. Now, because this was live, they couldn't sort of like edit it all. So it's like, oh, cut to Tim. So they cut to Tim, and Tim's like eating. Now, he's only using one hand. He looks like he's using a fork. Could only be a spoon. And he's putting food in his mouth, and then like half of it's falling out again. I'm thinking, I don't really want to be watching that. I'd rather see a close-up on Scrooge's face, or maybe the Ghost of Christmas Present. He's the one who's singing. Then we go to Fred's house, and it starts off with a reprise of Old Fashioned Christmas, the song they were singing at the very start. Fred was singing at the very start, in fact. And Fred talks a bit about Scrooge like he does in the book. Sadly, they don't play a game though. But then Fred starts singing about the birthday party of the king, singing about the fact that it's the birth of Jesus, which I thought was interesting because that's like the Cratchit song about Santa. Well, over with Fred, they're talking about Jesus. And again, that's something else you don't hear about in the book much. There are suggestions about Jesus and that, but they don't actually mention him by name. Then Scrooge leaves and we get the ghost of Christmas yet to come. Now, there's no gentleman in the street talking about some bloke who's died. All we see is Harry Hawkins. Do you remember the guy earlier? He's like an old Joe character, but he's the one that was asking after like old rags or bottles. He's there coming out of Scrooge's house with Mrs. Dilber. And they got bags of clothes, I'm guessing it's clothes, and they're in the streets. For some reason, they decide to start going through it in the street. You've just loaded the bags up in the house. Why come out into the street and then check what you've got in them again? Do you know what I mean? But, you know, go accept it. And Mrs. Dilbert says this.
He'll have no need for woolen clothes, not where he's going.
More likely, he'll need a fan.
Which I thought was mildly funny. And then Scrooge is like, well, who's dead? Who's dead? Who's died? And the ghost points to his grave. And then a bunch of dancers, dressed, all of them are dressed like the ghost are yet to come. They come out and start wrapping him in chains. And this is a 3.5 minute dance number. 3.5 minutes. Yeah, so if you need a wee, now's your chance to go, kids. 3.5 minutes. And then Scrooge starts singing to the ghost of Christmas yet to come. Well, I say singing. Basil Rathbone has not got the best singing voice. I'll tell you that, kids. He starts singing, mankind should be my business. And when I say singing, he's sort of talking the words. He sings a little bit, but not a lot.
Mankind should be my business. Mankind should be my trade. I realize it is my business to give my fellow man, my aid.
And then he wakes up. And this was an interesting bit. It cuts from his hands clawing at the ghost of Christmas yet to come. And then it's him clawing at his bedpost. Okay. And I'm thinking, right, well, how did they do that if this was broadcast live? And I'm wondering if they've sort of cut it so that it's someone else's hands clawing at the ghost of Christmas yet to come, while Basil Rathbone is like crawling along the ground as quick as he can till he's out of shot and then runs off and jumps in the bed. I'm guessing that's how they did it. He wakes up, he's all excited, of course, doesn't even know what day it is. So he shouts out, "Oi, it's Mrs. Dilber in the street." Yeah, we don't get the boy in the street, we get Mrs. Dilber. He's like, "Mrs. Dilber, come on in." She comes in, and also in comes Harry Hawkins again. And he gives them both a little bit of cash, like a little bag of cash each. It's like, hang on a minute. What's Harry Hawkins done? He doesn't work for you. What are you giving him money for? Still, he gives him the money, and then they start holding hands and dancing around in a circle, which is something. Then it cuts to the Cratchits, and they're all getting ready for Christmas. The doorbell goes, they open the door, there's a turkey there. This is interesting. This is the first time I've seen it like this. The turkey was already cooked. Where do you get a cooked turkey on Christmas Day? I do not know. But however he'd managed it, Scrooge managed to get him one. And then Scrooge turns up straight afterwards. Scrooge comes in, he's got loads of presents. And it's interesting because he knows all the children's names. And I don't remember hearing their names earlier, but he names them. So you've got Martha, who we know, Peter, that's also in the book. Then you've got Belinda and William. And what I thought was really cool about this is Belinda is the name of one of Miss Piggy and Kermit's kids. Yeah, she's got the two girls, Bettina and Belinda. And I like that. Yeah, I thought that was pretty cool. And Scrooge has got a shirt for Peter. Do you remember? It's a bit of a callback, isn't it? Because Peter was whinging about how tight his shirt was. And a hat for Martha. And she's going, oh my goodness, it's got ostrich plumes. How did you know? And then he's also got another music box for Tim. But this one's better than the other one. Yeah, well done, Scrooge. Then we get a reprise of the song that the Ghost of Christmas Present was singing about Tiny Tim dying, but this time it sounds like he's not going to die. And we get a reprise after that of the song about Santa Claus that Martha was singing to Tim earlier. Yeah. And then Scrooge goes off and they're sort of all waving goodbye to him in the street. He's off to Fred's. He has mentioned that he's got to go to Fred's. We don't see him back at Fred's. And then it cuts back to the four lads singing Holly Ho, which is a song they started with, and they sing it a couple of times throughout. I'll play a little bit of it for you. Here it comes.
Holly ho, holly ho, 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 holly ho, holly ho.
Christmas carol written long ago.
And then, the very end bit, is the entire cast, every single person, are all lined up on the soundstage. And it sort of pans across them as they're all singing Old Fashioned Christmas again. So yeah, they love singing Old Fashioned Christmas. And that's how it ends. Now, as it goes, it's not the best quality because it's old. And like I told you how they filmed it. Originally, like I said, it was in colour. This is a black and white one. The songs are fine. The performances. I don't like Basil Rathbone as Scrooge. There you go, I said it. And this is actually, I should have mentioned this at the start. This is actually the second version I've done where he played Scrooge. There was another really shorter version. I don't know if you remember, I talked about it. But the one thing that stood out to me was it looked like he was wearing a traffic cone on his head. His hat was so pointy. Yeah, that wasn't a good version. And, you know, this was okay. I'm glad I watched it. I don't think I'll go back to it though. There are other versions that I prefer much more. But if you want to check it out, it is on YouTube, The Stingiest Man in Town, and you know, it's some ink. Now let's do this. And that is it for this episode. I know I often do a recommendation of something for you, but I don't think I've got anything at the moment. I'm listening to the same old podcasts and watching the same old TV. So yeah, sorry, no recommendation this week. I want to say a big thank you to Bob Baker for his two segments, and also Pamela Wootton for saying how much she loved the Santa Banter from last episode, and also Natalie Bickle for sending through that Christmas short story anthology thing. If you want to write a story for that, you've still got time. I say you've still got time. This is coming out end of July 2024. Odds are you're listening to this after August 2024. You missed your window. Having said that, there's always next year, kids. So why not go and write a short story? Maybe that should be this episode's recommendation. Write a short story, boys and girls, about Christmas. Also, I want to welcome to the team Kevin Church, our Canadian Christmas podcast correspondent. If you want to get in touch, you know what to do. You can email me at totalchristmas@gmail.com, or you can go on the website. That's totalchristmaspodcast.com. Of course, there's the Facebook page where I do put some stuff up when I remember to. I'll always put a link to the episode, or say no. Actually, I don't think I did. It's out there. Why not go and follow me on Facebook? I'll be back again in 2 weeks' time. In the meantime, you know I love you. Merry, happy Christmas.
Chance we could get going.
Yeah. Tony, drive!
You need to take us to a park not far from here where there is a sleigh. And whilst I know it sounds weird,
he's Santa!
He really is!
I am!
I'm not an elf.